Across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world, on the internet, by webcast and by podcast, my name is Howard Hughes, and this is The Unexplained. Thank you for coming back to the show, and thank you for the fabulous feedback to the last two shows here. Edition 40, which was Michael Horn and the Billy Meyer prophecies, highly controversial stuff that, if you haven't heard that, I think you need to. Still getting feedback about that, and the audience split down the middle about it. Half of you saying this is the biggest load of garbage we've ever heard, and half of you saying this is the key to everything. It's amazing. I don't know. I have to stand in the middle here. I can't take a view on any guest. My jury has to always be out about whatever subjects we have. Edition 41, still getting in feedback from that too. Michael Tellinger, South African researcher, taking his work to America now. He's on a big tour of the US. And all I can say is that if you get a chance to see him, if he comes to a city near you, and I know he's done New York and he's doing many other cities in America, please try and make the time to go and see and hear this man. He is very, very good in person. Michael Tellinger was Edition 41, like I say. Coming up, we have Edition 42. More about this in a moment. It is another controversial guest and a chance for me to catch up with somebody I thought had disappeared and was very concerned about for quite a while, I have to say. I'll explain why. Just to get into a couple of things, thank you for the donations. Please keep those donations coming. They are vital to this work. The very fact I'm able to talk to you now, the fact I'm able to maintain all of this and keep it going, is down to your donations. So, please, if you enjoy these shows, if they mean anything to you, and if you can, if you think they're worth it, go to the website front page. There's a PayPal link there, and please make a donation to this show to enable it to continue. It is a model, as I've said before, like America's National Public Radio, where they don't charge people for listening. Periodically, they have a pledge drive, and listeners to NPR in America think, we'll donate something because we enjoyed this show or that show. Maybe they like Car Talk or one of the other great shows, Fresh Air, whatever else they do there. Similar model here. This is our little cottage industry in the UK, tiny little thing. In order for it to keep going, it needs your support. So please, if you can, make a donation. Go to the website, www.theunexplained.tv. Same place, too, by the way, for your feedback about shows. Vital, that is. Keep letting me know what you think about the shows. I tried a little experiment, a few shows back now, maybe two or three, where I said, I want to get your views about the kind of guests we should have. And the general view was, we want more controversial science and subjects around science and fewer psychics and mediums. Now, that is a pretty solid response that I got, and it is fairly consistent. I haven't been able to put figures on it, but if I was to take a ballpark figure, I'd say probably something like 80% or more of you feel that way. So I'm going to try and steer the program that way. That's not to say that I won't occasionally have a great psychic or a medium or a healer on here, somebody like that, because I think that makes the world go round, and some of these people are well worth hearing. But we'll try and keep it to the mainstream core subjects, and that is my pledge to you here. Few things that have come up from your emails, some very, very interesting guest suggestions, and I always say, and it is no less true now than it was when I've said it in the past, if you suggest a guest for the show, I will get straight on it, and we'll see if we can book them for the show, if they're worth having on. Something else that arose from Wendy's email. Wendy, thank you for your emails. Listening to this show on a Wi-Fi radio. Now, Wendy, who's been a listener to this show, I think, from the radio side, years and years ago when the show was on radio, and this followed me to the internet. Wendy tells me that on some internet radios, this show is available, but not on all of them. That's worth pointing out, that there are certain internet radios available, like I know the Pure Evoke Flow has my show on it, and I'm very grateful for that. But there are other radios that don't have podcasts on. So if your Wi-Fi radio is podcast-enabled, if the operating system allows podcasts, please tell the people behind that system, because you can always go and suggest what is on those systems. Just suggest to them that they put The Unexplained there. Certainly the Pure Evoke Flow has available through its operating system all of The Unexplained. I don't know who suggested it goes on there, but I am grateful to that person and all the guys at Pure who make fine radios, I understand. As I speak these words, you can just hear
just goes to show, doesn't it, that this is an absolutely live recording right here in London. We've got the emergency services outside rushing to some emergency. You probably just heard the siren there very silently in the background. So I try and do these shows exactly as live. What happens as I'm saying these words is what would have happened had I been saying these words live to you, for better or worse, for good or ill. It's exactly like a live show. It makes it more interesting for me, and I hope it makes it more interesting for you. What else have I got to say now? Adam Cornwell, webmaster, making constant refinements to the website. We're going to try and get a guest suggestion forum going at some point, where you can actually click on the front page of the website, and if you've got somebody that you'd like to blast me with as a guest and get me to see this quickly, that'll be a way to reach me that way. So we're trying to make refinements to the site and keep it interesting and keep it fresh, bearing in mind this is a very, very small enterprise, but it's one that I'm very, very proud of. Adam has worked so hard on this, and he and I were talking about the statistics of data transfer for the show. And if I tell you that since Adam took over the website and the distribution of the show a year ago, wow, the figures for this show, the amount of data we are shifting, even by the day, is enormous compared with 12 months ago. You did that. Thank you very much. And again, I never forget him, and I never will. Martin, the guy who made the theme tune, did it for no money because he believes in the show. Martin, thank you, and I hope all is well with you. Please get in touch. Love to hear from you. Okay, this time round, it is edition 42. And once again, we have a controversial guest, a man who has been on this show before. His name is Scott Stevens, and his website is weatherwars.info. I had him on the radio show a couple of times, 4 or 5 years ago, and I found him fascinating. His premise, his idea was that our weather is being messed about with. Well, that's not unique. Other people have said that before, but he says that there are powers that be in this world who mess around with our weather for economic gain and political ends and all sorts of other things, and it's happening right under our noses. If you want to know why great disasters happen with the climate and with the weather, well, it's could be, according to Scott, because people are messing with it and they have the technology, and they've had it for a long time, to do that. Interesting premise. Now, Scott and I talked around this stuff a few times on radio, like I say, and then the guy disappeared. And I have to say, because of the sensitivity of the things that he was saying, I started getting worried for him. I thought, has this man been kidnapped? Has he vanished? Has something happened to him, or has he just given it up? You get the answer to the question, what happened to you, Scott, coming up very soon here on this show. Thank you again for your feedback. Please keep the donations coming. Here comes the guest on edition 42, the man behind weatherwars.info, Scott Stevens. Hello, Scott. Long time no talk. How are things with you?
Things are good. Things are good. You know, I have made some changes kind of in my life, and I've gotten off the front range and moved higher into the mountains into a location kind of a little bit more remote. And so, you know, getting that move underway and my evolving understanding of what's going on in the skies and what the weather is.
Which I want to get into. Whereabouts are you? I know that when I called you, you're in the mountain time area, and I know that's like 7 hours back from London time, and it's an hour away from Pacific time, West Coast USA. Where are you?
I ended up settling in a town called Crestone in the San Luis Valley in south central Colorado. Our elevation here at the house is about 8,100 feet. So
wowee.
It's a high alpine valley, and over, you know, I can look out my western window, and it looks like there should be an ocean out there. There's this flat valley, and underneath, you know, the sand that's there is one of the cleanest aquifers and the second largest aquifer in North America. So there is just energetically, Howard, it's amazing.
Well, it sounds a damn sight better than the part of London I'm speaking to you from now, let me tell you that. But I was going to say, with that kind of elevation, you know, the air must be very clean, but is there any air at all up there?
it takes some adjusting. I'll be honest with you. It took a little adjusting when I got here in May, because your blood has to adjust, and you eat a little differently. You have to drink more water. I think that's one thing that's so important for our bodies is proper hydration. And then getting that clean water into the system, into our physical system, is so important for keeping this biological entity that we reside in.
You know, I think you're so right about hydration. I'm having an issue with that at the moment. And I tend to drink loads and loads of black coffee, doing broadcasting all my career. That's what I do. And that dehydrates you. And then in the evening, I might have a glass of wine and that dehydrates you some more. And at the end of the day, you end up, even without expecting to and intending to, you end up short of water in your body. And that has all sorts of consequences that I've been coming to terms with and trying to rectify these last couple of months. So I know exactly what you mean.
Yep, keeping that pH of the system is so important. And I had an interesting conversation with a guy. He was in Hawaii, and this was just, I think it was last Saturday, and he said if people walked around with a conductivity meter and tested their urine, and if the value is under 10,000, then they're in good shape. If it's above 10,000, body is not flushing the toxins properly.
Gee whiz, Scott, I think you could probably top up car batteries with mine.
and then what's happening is the kidneys are not working properly, and then the blood becomes the storehouse for these toxins. And we use, and he talks about something called zeta potential, and it's the ability of the body to release items which are positively charged. And we're gonna make a segue here into chemtrails and aluminum here, because we our body collects aluminum, and it is one of the an amazing element, aluminum, because it is so highly positively charged that it attracts and holds on to toxins. And then he transitioned into aluminum as a component of deodorant, and that we're constantly putting these nano-sized particles of aluminum into our lymphatic system, and that breast cancers and all of these upper body cancers and tumors that begin to show up because of what the aluminum attracts and holds on to if we don't continue to flush our body with alkaline water.
Scary stuff, and I think it's a wake-up call, and I think more and more people are going to have to realize that, as you say, hydration's so important. That's not what I expected to be talking with you about, but it is fascinating, isn't it? And I'll tell you what, very close to my own life.
You should know that what we think we're going to talk about is never what we end up talking about.
I used to listen. We did a few segments on radio, on a couple of radio stations that I was at a few years ago, and you were one of my favorite guests by a country mile, because the stuff that you were talking about, modification of our weather, was so close to home for all of us. Your take on it was so different from everybody else's. Plus, you came to it from a broadcasting background, television weather forecasting. You were a compulsive guest. And then suddenly, we did all those conversations on radio, and I tried to get you when I launched the online version of this show about 3 to 4 years ago. And I tried old numbers for you, and I tried searching you on the internet, and I tried other people's databases, and you had vanished off the face of the earth. And then I started worrying. And for a while, I worried a lot, because I thought, well, there's some of the stuff you're talking about. And that was, and we will get into this, because I know you've updated it all, and we need to talk about it now. That's what we're here for. Some of the stuff you talked about is very sensitive, about groups, individuals, cartels of business people, governments even, deliberately modifying our weather. And I thought, well, maybe he's upset somebody, and maybe he's just simply disappeared.
Yeah. Because I came at this from a broadcast perspective, I was not on the inside. I was not a contractor. I was not in the military. I've never signed any non-disclosure agreements. I'm just discussing what I observe in the skies, and apply your logic and reasoning and to what I'm seeing in the skies. And I'm very open-minded. One thing I learned years ago was don't discount anything. If something seems out of place and bizarre, well, it probably is, but we just haven't yet developed the context or the understanding to place it in its proper perspective.
But it's so unusual to find somebody who forecasts weather for a living, as I don't know whether you're still doing that on the television, but you certainly did for a long period. And weather forecasters on TV, are massively important in Europe, but they are meat and drink and hugely important in North America because the huge amount of local variety of just local weather, not just climate, but local weather you have there. So the TV weather forecast is vital. But most weather forecasters I know, and I know a few, don't even talk about global warming and stuff like that because it's too controversial. You went way, way beyond that.
Well, because what I was dealing with inside of you know, what effect are they having long-term on the climate? And if you're up there creating cloud cover, if you're up there introducing waves in the atmosphere which accentuate storm development or inhibit storm development, you are messing with the baseline of what the planet's weather would typically look like. And if Lieutenant Colonel Bearden's work is correct, and he's the one that kind of got me launched into this field 8, 9, 10 years ago, and his website is chenier.org, C-H-E-N-I-E-R-E.org, then if they truly are mucking with the weather, we've lost the baseline. We've lost what the planet is truly doing with her climatic systems. And so, you know, we can have NOAA and the National Weather Service and the Met Office, you know, ballyhooing that, you know, this is the warmest year ever and we've had the most this and the most that. Well, it doesn't mean anything because it's not the natural conditions of what's going on.
Well, that's a fact. Now, this year, possibly more than many other years, has been hugely unusual. In this country, let me tell you, as we record this, and this show is not going to go online until a week or so after we've recorded this for a whole variety of reasons. But at the moment, as I am speaking, we are just coming out of a period of weird, wacky weather for summertime where we've had gales. It appears to me, and it appeared to me a few weeks ago when I was getting up to go to work really, really early in the morning in London, it appeared to me that the seasons had already changed here, and it was already what we call autumn, what you call fall, a couple of weeks ahead of schedule. Now, spring appeared early in this country, so that wasn't that big a surprise, but now we have torrential rain, which you don't get at this time of year. You normally have to wait till October, November for that kind of stuff. Gale force winds, trees being blown down, people being struck by lightning. Weird stuff. That's bad enough here in England where everything is on a smaller scale. But you go to Pakistan right now and they have these devastating floods. Meanwhile, 3 weeks, was it 4 weeks, of an amazing heat wave in Russia where Moscow was gripped by temperatures well in excess of 40 degrees for a long period. And people wondered, when the hell was that going to end? That means our grain and wheat supplies are being affected by this. Prices of all our food going up. The weather this year has been incredibly strange, I think. Am I right? And if I am right, number one, tell me why you think this might be. And number two, who do you think might be doing it, if anybody is?
You are right, because all we have to do is read from the headlines. There is a reason why, and the reason why they do all this is their addiction to social engineering. They engineer circumstances so they can exploit them to whatever their ends are.
Who are they?
Who can afford the trillions of dollars for the technology and the surveillance, and then who benefits from it?
Well, if you were a conspiracy theorist, and you have enough of them in America, don't you, you would say that it is probably the government behind the government, the Illuminati, whatever you want to call it. These are the people who have a vested interest in being able to do these things. And if some people, ordinary people, get hurt in the middle of it all, so what? Is that what you are saying?
Well, and they've never had a problem sparking off wars and dealing with death. That is, that they have never paused at that. And that has happened for thousands upon thousands of years. You know, a 100 years war, you know, in my moral compass is reprehensible. But it isn't an issue for the powers that be. You know, they do this regularly. We are cannon fodder. We have always been cannon fodder and always will be cannon fodder until we are sovereign.
Okay, well, here we are in a situation where, as I talk to you, we've got this weird weather in the UK. They have those desperately tragic floods in Pakistan that have claimed so, so many lives. And fortunately, the aid effort is now starting to get into gear, but it's not fast enough and it's certainly not enough. However, we are starting to deal with that. But are you saying that somebody's deliberately caused this? And if somebody you think has deliberately caused this, why on earth would they want to do that?
Well, I think that there's some goal, some unification that they want to happen across Central Asia. And it is interesting that, I mean, as Americans and the American military have gone over there and continue to build these installations. It's like there's something very, very valuable over there, and they want to cast their reach into those geographic locations.
So are we blaming America for this sort of thing? We won't say specifically this thing, but are we saying that America is getting its hands dirty with this?
I think the power structure of this world emanates from London.
London?
And always has.
Well, I'm sure there'll be some people in our government here who would be very, very surprised to hear that. Why would that be?
That doesn't necessarily mean that it's those people in government. If you're going to remain hidden, you're not going to run for office.
All right, then. You were saying, and when we spoke, oh, God, it must be 4 or 5 years ago on radio, you were saying, and I seem to remember your core premise was, that there were teams of powerful people who included the most powerful business people whose names you may not know, and also people of power and influence whose names you may not know, who are teamed together in some sort of cabal, clique, whatever, and they get together and do these things. Is that still what you're telling me? And what evidence do you have for it?
I really don't think anything along those lines has changed.
Okay, what evidence is there in 2010 for anything like that?
Well, I think the cleanest evidence would be the secrecy that happens behind Bilderberg meetings. The secrecy and the agendas talked about in the Council on Foreign Relations.
This is the Bilderberg group, which is said to be, by some, by many, the group that is the absolute elite that calls the shots in everything everywhere.
And remember, there was a time when they talked about royalty and they talked about governorship and leadership and pharaohship, because it is this old, you know, where that authority was lowered from heaven, where there was another authority that, if you go way back to Sumerian times, you know, was not necessarily of human origin. And I have to put that out there for consideration, that you are looking at energies that are controlling, that aren't necessarily what you and I would consider an elected official or even human. So, and I think we've been subject to those powers for a very, very long time.
So this comes back to the theory that somewhere out there in the universe, or wherever they might be in a parallel dimension, there is a force greater than ours, if we want to use War of the Worlds terminology, minds immeasurably superior to our own, who are dictating what goes on.
Right. I mean, how do you have, in the wake of the last flood 12,000 years ago, an explosion of agriculture, that these grains, these rye, these wheats, all of the grains that we need just boom appeared. Agriculture appears, writing appears, mathematics appears, massive monuments, I mean stone, massive monuments appear. You know, there is another influence that archaeology is scared to death to talk about, to acknowledge. I mean, you've got so many unanswered questions around Egypt. You know, why is it there? How is the precision from the explainable?
You know, well, you can explain it by saying very simply that the technology came to us from a species beyond ourselves, right, from another part of the universe,
yep,
and they've always been there and they're still there right now. But it's one thing to say that that might be the case, and there is more and more evidence coming to light on this show. A little while ago, we heard from a guy called Michael Tellinger in South Africa, who's currently doing a big tour of the United States, who says something similar, but he doesn't say that these people are manipulating our weather. He says that they're using us as a slave species and have for a long time to mine gold and do other bits of their bidding, and they've been changing our DNA and all sorts of stuff. That is different from saying they're actually controlling the weather to keep us all in servitude for reasons of their own.
Well, I mean, we got to this train of thought by exploring the concept of the cabal, that there is a power source which is hidden behind the elected democracies and republics, and they, you know, pull the strings. They pull the purse strings. They pull the strings of the elected officials to their ends, you know, with, I don't want to say total disregard for the population, but it truly is for their ends and their designs.
Has anybody ever contacted you, though? I mean, when a theory is on the way to being correct, or it has a grain of truth at least in it, mm-hmm, quite often somebody comes out of the woodwork and says, actually, Scott, I can't tell you who I am, but I used to be this or do that or worked in such a place, and I can tell you, you are on the money. Has anybody ever done that with you?
Oh, numerous times, and mostly military people.
Really?
Yeah.
In the
yeah.
U.S.?
Yep. Oh, yeah. And here in Colorado, too.
But you said the base of all of this was in London. I needed to bring you back to, and that's my fault for taking you off that point. Why is London the center?
It's the money center. And I think they'd like to see that it happens in New York, but, you know, the bullion exchange is in London, the metals exchange. It's just, it all comes back to London. And it's interesting because, and if you go back to look how the Revolutionary War and the War of 1812 was paid for, you know, it comes back to London. And those strings, you know, because they're royal, those bloodlines feel that they own us, that we came from them. And I suppose in the strictest sense that is true. But that kind of negates the free will that we keep being told that we have, and we're not quite able of actually living through and living out our own free will, is our sovereignty. And I think that's really what this next decade is about. Is about human beings, individuals, seeing the oppression of the powers that be and being frustrated with it, and eventually, you know, saying, you know, giving them the finger and saying, we're going to be on our own. And I think there's a conflict coming so that we can be on our own. Because I think if you were able to take away these influences from the powers that be, much of our civilizations, the poverty and the crazy energy policies and the warring would all just kind of dissolve.
Now, to a lot of people, this is going to sound like, I don't want to be cruel about this, but it will sound like crazy ramblings to some people. That's where you need solid fact to substantiate all of this. You say that there's a cabal in London, and they are doing things like manipulate the weather for ends of their own, and we need to wake up, smell the coffee, and fight these people?
I think that's what the Tea Party is all about, isn't it?
Mm. Well, isn't that something else? But I know what you're saying. So you think we need another Boston Tea Party, but over here?
I think we need one about every 25 years.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, I really do. I really do.
Well, you looking know, at all this stuff that's happening now, for example, I was reading in a paper the other day that the weather people are reliably telling us the Gulf Stream, which is what we depend on here in Britain to keep our weather milder than it ought to be for the distance north we are, the latitude we're at, the Gulf Stream is failing us at the moment, and that is partly down to all of this. Well, that is nothing to do with people manipulating the weather, is it? That's just a natural cycle, is it not?
Well, and I think a lot of the climate that we like to attribute to greenhouse gases is simply a function of natural cycles and our intimate relationship with the sun. You know, the sun is the power source for all of the planets, and it keeps us alive. And if the sun is going to go quiet, as we have seen happen at periodic intervals throughout history, that there is a direct and not immediate, but very it's a fairly quick relationship that when the sun goes quiet, the Earth begins to cool. And once something that came out of this ClimateGate issue last November was one of the letters from the guy that works at the National Center for Atmospheric Research here in Boulder, Colorado, saying that they couldn't hide the decline, that for 15 years the planet has been cooling. And they have gone through great lengths to hide the decline so they could keep the global warming myth going. Not the climate change, because climate changes, that's just what it does. It evolves, it moves, it adjusts. I mean, the Earth is a living biological system, and it's going to adjust and change to internal and external stimuli.
And as you say, the sun has been extraordinarily quiet for a very, very long period. We have not. I mean, we had a big solar flare, I think, very recently, but that was a rare event. By and large, I think I'm right in saying that the sun has been very, very quiet.
Very quiet. And so the concern is what happens is the depth that the quiet was, you know, the bottom of that trough, would that, on the inverse side of that, when we go to a solar peak, is it a truncated solar peak, or is it an amplified solar peak? you know, to equal the depth of the trough? Will it be as just as large on the other side? And I think we're going to find out here in, it has to be within 2 years, because Solar Max is supposed to be 2012, 2013.
And you're thinking that the Solar Max may be, because we've had a real deep minimum, the maximum is going to be equally the same the other way?
It could be. I mean, that has to be a possibility that's considered, and maybe that's why NASA continues to talk about extreme solar storms, you know, for this coming Solar Max.
And let's not beat about the bush about it. If you have extreme solar storms and that kind of stuff, that has very, very serious consequences, not only for our weather, but electromagnetically here.
And that truly is the big concern, because the last time we had, a massive solar flare was, 1856, and we were just in the beginnings of telegraph and power lines and so forth, and that brought the whole grid down. It literally, those exposed long runs of copper and aluminum wire end up collecting this solar charge, and then it blows out everything along the system because it can't ground properly.
I don't want to sound like some smart-ass journalist here, because that
but
is not
are.
Me at all. Well, I wish I was, but, you know, one of those days long ago I would have aspired to be, but now, you know, I just say what comes into my head, and here's what comes into my head right now. Okay. Here you are talking about these natural things, and I have heard people talking about the solar minima and the solar maximum, or maxima, causing all sorts of problems here. That I can comprehend. But in a way, that's arguing against yourself. You're saying here are natural cycles that can affect the weather very adversely, everything down here. But those are things over which some elite, if they were sitting in London and calling the shots and determining the weather and doing all sorts of other stuff, they would be rendered powerless by this stuff. So they're not as powerful as all that.
Or maybe that gives us a reason why they have built many dozens of underground bases and are in the process of storing seeds and moving centers of government away from the coastlines.
So they're going to protect themselves and let the rest of us perish?
Of course. Of course. As what, I mean, and historically, there is a renewal of the surface of this planet on a regular interval, whether it's 12,000 years, 26,000 years, or 3,600 years, there is a cycle of renewal, and each cycle, I want to say variable, but does impact the surface of this planet to a certain degree, and it's just a requirement to keep the living system, you know, fresh and vibrant.
And even if they don't agree with a thing that you say, there will be a lot of scientists who agree with that point, who come at it from all sorts of different disciplines. But a lot of people say, we are in for some major changes. Why? Because we've always had them, and we've had a very quiet time now. We've really enjoyed ourselves during the Industrial Revolution and all the things that we've had, and the prosperity, comparatively, that we've all enjoyed. It's time for some more of this stuff to happen, and because it's much bigger than we'll ever be, we're going to suffer.
Exactly. Or take advantage of the coming situation. And, you know, there's
right.
an email that showed up in my box yesterday, and it was a 90-page PDF. And it was a person who was a contractor for NASA in their telecommunications work. And this person was there to facilitate a lot of video conferencing that happens between, say, Boeing and Lockheed Martin and NASA and Honeywell and all of these contractors. And the gist of the PDF was that something is coming into the solar system, and NASA's is vigorously attempting to quantify how it will impact the sun as we move through a different energy or a different environment in space. And does that explain the deep solar minimum, the unforecast deep solar minimum? How will that impact the solar max?
This 90-page document suggested there is something beyond the sun influencing the sun.
Right.
What would that something be?
You know, the summary was that it would be responsible for triggering the big Earth changes. It wouldn't be an impact. It wouldn't be a gravitational flyby. It would be etheric, and it would be electromagnetic. and how that impacts the Earth was the big question. And that was why they were spending, you know, the hundreds of millions of dollars in putting up all of these new solar observatories right. that they're putting into space.
So this is where your theory really comes into play, because if there is this group of people who call the shots and can change the weather and have all sorts of power and we don't know about them, if they know this is coming down the track, then they can protect themselves. But not only that, as you said, they can make sure that they've stored up enough food to eat. They can make sure that they've made a nice fat profit out of it all. And yep. most of that off the backs of us, because we don't know that this stuff is coming down the track. Right. And even when we do get to know about it, there's not a hell of a lot that we can do.
And more importantly, they can pre-position genetic material, human beings, to repopulate afterwards.
That's a hell of a leap, though, isn't it, from what we were saying initially? You're talking about something so fundamental that it could be global cataclysm followed by a rebirth controlled by a bunch of people who've always been in charge. So it's, what was that famous old rock song that said, meet the new boss, same as the old boss?
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
Yep, well, and that's, the boss wants to stay the boss. He's not about to lose his fiefdom over whatever's inbound from outer space.
If they're so powerful, and 5 years ago on radio we talked about some of this stuff, I don't think we got into it in quite the depth that we are now because of commercial breaks, and on the station that I was on last time around, I think we had sports reports and stuff, so we never quite got as deeply into it as all of this. But if these people, these beings controlling them, if this is such a hugely powerful thing, how come they haven't got to you yet? How come they haven't silenced you? If you're really on the money, if you're really at the core of it all, because that's what I feared happened to you 5 years ago, and then I did a reality check on myself and thought that couldn't be the case. Well, clearly it hasn't been the case, but if there is such a power out there, I'm amazed they're letting you get away with this.
Because I don't think I have the full story yet. And if... Because...
Well, that's a great reason for shutting you up, isn't it? Because you might get the full story one day.
I think at some point, I'll understand the bigness and the completeness of what's happening, but I don't think I'm there yet. You know, I think once that person shows up, whomever he or she is, then they will either get behind it because it'll fit in with their timeline, with what's going to happen, and they'll let it go, because what the truth will do will agitate the masses who continue to live under the illusion of this reality and what's been shown to them or told to them in the past. And they'll use that agitation, again, to their ends to keep the people from focusing. And that's the big thing that human beings are not very good at right now, is focus.
So let me, well, that's a fact, because they're too busy watching, you know, X Factor over here and America's Got Talent and all the other, and American Idol, all that stuff.
Come on now, Simon Cowell's the bomb.
Well, he is. He's the man. I know that. I've got no beef with him. I think he's great. But having said all of that, so you're saying that this is the biggest conspiracy theory of the lot, isn't it? You're saying that they might actually want the grains of this stuff to get out there. So we are in panic and confusion, which the human race quite frequently is, not knowing what to do about it. And that keeps us even easier to control.
Exactly. And they will use disclosure of these various topics when they're ready, whether it's UFOs, whether it's our ancient heritage, whether it's our changing genetics, whether it's the food supply, whether it's the Federal Reserve and the monetary system, whether it's, you know, whether it's weather modification, whether it's why we went into Iraq, you know, all of these things are stimuli that they can use to stir the pot of humanity to keep dissent and misinformation and understanding. And the biggest one, Howard, is victimhood.
Victimhood.
Victimhood. That is the big one. And they can use all of this to elicit a response of victimhood.
All right. Well, how? In what way? They want to make us as individuals feel victims of how?
Imagine what would happen if on the Times tomorrow morning was the revelation of weather control, and that it's been going on for 40 years. And then you have in the sidebar all of the weather events that they have participated in either accentuating or suppressing. It would be a very long list and would involve the participation, the unwilling participation of billions of people.
All right, well, give me a few of the things that would be on this list if the Times ever did dare to publish something like that.
Let's talk about an Australian drought. You know, and what you do is create all of those people in Australia who either lost livelihoods or lost crops or lost income.
And they are all victims.
Droughts. They would all feel, they would all go into the woe is me. And then they would want revenge. And they would be angry. And that's the kind of consciousness that they want to spread through humanity prior to some kind of whatever 2012 is going to bring.
Are you arguing against yourself again here, though? Because at the beginning of this, you said you wanted people to know all about this so that once we wake up and smell the coffee, we can do something about it. But here you are saying that actually they want us to know all about this, so we get ourselves angry, so we're easier to control. In a way, the last thing we need is for everyone to know about this stuff and react in that way, because it's not going to do any of us any good.
And that explains why you couldn't get a hold of me from 2007 to now.
Explain.
I didn't want to feed the fear. I didn't want to participate in that because I didn't feel that it was serving people. And I mean, once you see the chemtrails, once you see the weather modification out there, you know, you can only have it pointed out to you so many times before you either see it, understand it, or you're just too blind to get it.
Were you scared at that point? Because you were saying some pretty big stuff in 2005 or so, 2006.
No,
were you frightened?
And I stand by virtually everything I said back then. You know, I don't think anything has changed. What's changed with me is my understanding of kind of how they do it. I know there's a life force, there's a chi, there's an energy, and it has an inherent spiral and a life, you know, in it, and they can accumulate and they can influence how this chi or this life force creates the weather. And it's how the Indians and their rain dances and would through consciousness, you know, communicate with the planet to evoke a change.
So how do they, as a group of powerful people calling the shots, what do? They go into a meeting, a cabinet session of some sort, and they say, okay, we want to bring a drought to Southeast England next summertime. Let's get to it, guys. How do they do it?
And Howard, if you know somebody who's at that level, I would love to have a talk with them.
Well, so, you know, I'd absolutely, that would be the greatest moment of my career, but I suspect it's not going to happen.
Yeah, I know they've got a playbook, and I know there's an agenda, and I'm certain that it's detail-rich.
How do you know they've got a playbook? Who's told you that they have an agenda?
How would they not have an agenda? I mean, how would you have an operation like this and not have an agenda? It would seem silly and a total waste of opportunity if you don't have an agenda. You know, it would belie the imagination to not have some kind of end goal, and then we play with the technologies, because once you begin to control something, there's an addictive behavior that begins to show up around it. And they are doing their darndest to hide their actions even as they get more bold.
So you're saying these people are getting, like any dictator, like Saddam Hussein and Hitler and anybody back through history, once you have some power and you prove you can do powerful things, you get hooked on it. You like it.
You do. You really do. And the last thing you want to see is, upon your death, that it evaporates. You want to be able to pass it on to somebody that you pre-choose that is worthy to continue that agenda which you've become very attached to.
So,
yeah.
Bad stuff is going to come down the track to us, possibly through natural events, but these people have allowed for all of that stuff, are making everything all right for themselves, are making sure that we cannot resist them once we find out what they're up to. So that's it, isn't it? Our fate is sealed if we believe what you're saying. We might as well give up now, all of us.
Well, I think they have an end game. And they're going to try to control it to their agenda.
And what do you say, Scott? Some people who listen to this are going to email me. They always do, and they have every right to, and I want them to, and I'm sure you'd want them to as well. And they will say, this man, Scott, you had on, I know you know him, Howard, and you've talked to him before, but what he's saying is so wacko, it's not even worth listening to. Tell me a sentence or two that I could fire back at them to change their minds. In other words, it will reveal.
It will reveal. It always does. It always does. I'm usually far enough ahead, you know, several years, you know, in what I'm talking about, that it's just patience. Patience. And the thing is, you've got to have that open mind. And once you're open-minded and non-judgmental in what you begin to see, then it begins to make sense. It just makes sense because they will go through the process of disclosure. They will do it because it'll serve them in the long run. And they don't do anything without there being some kind of benefit towards them.
You know, it always struck me, your story is very similar to somebody else I know quite well over here and have known him for quite a few years, David Icke. David Icke was a sportscaster, you might know this on television here. Big name, and you know, good-looking guy, very good at sportscasting. And suddenly, he has this kind of revelation moment when he goes to South America, and his life is never the same, and he gets condemned for a while as the potty prophet. Now there are a lot of people listening to him. Of course, there'll always be people who think that he's mad. You were in a similar situation because there you were forecasting the weather on television in America. Very responsible thing to do, guy in a nice suit with a big smile. And, you know, we see them in every city of the U.S., and I love them. But you were different. You changed. You said stuff that your bosses didn't like.
And I'll say it again. You know, I respected David, and I still do. And I like how his work has evolved over the years. Are you still there, Howard?
I'm still here. I think your stories are similar by the sounds of it. David may disagree, you might disagree, but it just sounds like there are some synergies between the pair of you because you both seem to have gone through experiences, and also both of you, there will be a lot of ordinary people who will say, this is just garbage.
Well, you know, I think this is why democracy works for the power elite, is because there's so many people that can't think clearly. They don't have the conscious awareness to put the separate pieces together with some kind of rational logic and reasoning, that it becomes very easy to control the masses. And quite honestly, most of the world's population is stupid. They really are.
Well, it's the old bread and circuses argument. Your old colleagues in television, we know what media people are like. I've worked among media people all my life, and so did you. Are you still in touch with them? Do they keep in touch with you?
Yeah. I got invited. Facebook's a wonderful thing for that, isn't it?
Okay, isn't it just? I know exactly what you're saying about that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, do some of these people get in touch with you and say, hey, Scott, way to go?
Not so much that. It's just how you're doing, and I'm beginning to see what you were talking about. You know, I get where you were going, you know, where you were coming from. And this is the curse of being at the point of a change in consciousness.
So what was it that enlightened you? People are bound to ask me this question, and if I don't ask you it, then I'm wrong. Turning point for you?
In 1997, I read a book, and it was called The Celestine Prophecy by James Redfield. And that changed my life.
How would that be?
Because it opened me, because prior to that, I was like, what happens with all of my life experience? Well, you know, so I die. What the heck happens to all of the wisdom, all of what I have learned in this time?
Isn't that a midlife crisis?
No, it was a philosophical debate in myself of the purpose of life. You know, why live if you're going to die and it's all gone? And that book, The Celestine Prophecy, allowed me to the understanding that there are other realms, that there are other layers to existence, and that no one ever dies. And that has been the huge control mechanism over the society perpetuated by religion, is that death is bad, and that death is the end.
So you believe you believe, like a lot of people believe, for different reasons, I suspect, than the ones that you believe this, that when we pop our clogs, as we see it in the UK, when we kick the bucket, when we die, we don't actually go away, we go on.
We go on.
I don't want to sound like Celine Dion here, but we go on.
No, it's like this life is dropping into a very dense, very slow, very dark existence. And then when we die, we pop back into the light where we see the greater potential. We can see into other spectrums. We can see why we chose to go down and bring that experience back into the higher existence.
So what about all these victims of natural and engineered climate catastrophes and other catastrophes? They die. They're going to have great understanding of what happened to them and who did it on the other side.
Well,
what happens then?
And the context for the life and for their experiences. And you know, there's something about this lower existence that absolutely is perfect. Everybody gets the experience that they need and in the dose that they need. That's just part of the law of how the universe works. There is a perfection to it. And so you and I and billions of others have had the opportunity to come to Earth, and in this freaked out experience, we learn, we grow, we thrive or not. And that's our choice, is to either thrive in this experience or to wail in woe is me. And
okay.
That's up to us.
Well, that's interesting. That's great philosophy, but how does it tie into what we've just been talking about, the elite and weather modification and all the rest of it? Where's the connection there, though?
Well,
I know I brought you to this point, but where's the connection?
Well, the connection is we're going to go back to the victim experience. You know, there's the victim or the abuser, and that's two sides of every experience. There's one or the other, almost without exception.
So what happens to the abuser then, the people who've engineered some of this stuff or have done bad things by protecting themselves? Are they going to go to hell?
In another life, they come back as the victim.
Really?
And through thousands of these experiences, they learn. And I promise you, Howard, I have been in that elite. I have been in that place where we have control and we exert our influence over others and we supersede the free will of others. I have been there.
How have you been there?
Through other life experiences. I've been there. We've all been there. We've been on both sides of this. And so it is our job to come to peace with that you can't have compassion without being the abuser. You've got to have had both experiences so you can separate yourself and say, okay, I've had enough of this experience. You know, it's just time to come to peace with it and either not be the victim and not be the abuser. You just live in balance. And that's a really, really difficult place to have that kind of balanced experience on Earth, because there are so few examples of that. You don't get it from church. You don't get it from religion.
Now, listen, the reason you're on here now and the reason we're talking again after a gap of 4 or 5 years is because I read a posting somewhere that you had reappeared on Coast to Coast American Radio, and I thought, that's interesting. I've got to try and find him now and talk to him myself again. When you did appear on Coast to Coast American Radio, a show that, you know, pains me to admit it, but it is bigger than this one, at the moment, that is. What kind of, if you were saying this kind of stuff, and I assume you were, tell me if you weren't, but what kind of reaction did you get from the American public? Were they sympathetic?
Well, we talked a lot more about weather. And then just their ability to massage the atmosphere and the environment. You know, it's not hard to do. It's really not hard to do.
Well, let's get back in our final few minutes here. Let's get it back to that core point, the one that we reached 5 years ago, 4 years ago. You said that there was an elite. A lot of these people were to do with business, and quite often for political, but certainly for economic ends. They would manipulate the weather in ways that they knew how to in order to control crop growth and crop failure, to make sure that they were constantly on the winning side. Is that still your core premise?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, the Chicago Board of Exchange has this whole menu of financial derivative products based on weather. So if you can rig the game, you can make lots of money from the fools who are not aware, you know, of your abilities to manipulate the weather.
And you're saying that there are people doing this now. We obviously cannot, for very clear reasons, name names either side of the Atlantic, because these people have lawyers and more money than I'll ever see. But you're saying that there are people who do this kind of stuff now.
That's a given. You know, and any meteorologist, given some time, I can sit down with and show him the geometry of how they constrain the jet stream, of how they use pulses of downward forced energy spirals to then create massive updrafts. How Colonel Bearden has shown us how that, you know, crossing two scalar beams, which are tied to the time domain, can create an endothermic wave or interference zone.
And where did they get this technology from? The previous civilization?
Technology. This is 100 years old. This technology is 100 years old. You know, it's about keeping humanity in isolation and under their thumb. That's all they're there to do.
Now, listen, I talked about one thing before, and I realized there was an error in what I said. I talked about the Gulf Stream. Well, the Gulf Stream is a water current that is climatically affected. That does affect our weather, and I think that has been changing. But, of course, the things we should be talking about are the jet stream. That is what controls everybody's weather, isn't it? Very, very high-altitude winds, and they have been changing as well, haven't they? Is that so?
That's the whole purpose of the chemtrails, is to understand the flow of the jet stream and the temperature and the moisture and the argon content of the jet stream. That's what the trails do. That gives them direct surveillance of what the atmosphere is doing. There is the fallout from the chemicals and the very, very fine particulates that they use, but they need the layers of the atmosphere to scintillate when they observe it from space, so that way they can see how all the different layers are moving. And if you're going to apply an electromagnetic solution, and I use that term broadly, to a portion of the jet stream, then you go out, trace it, you lay a target, you apply your electromagnetic solution, and then you observe to see how your input into the atmosphere changes the atmosphere. Then you go out, lay another trace of trails, measuring your change. Watch the drift, take that data, put it into an atmospheric model, and see if the solution is what you want the weather to do. If it's not, you lay out another target, apply your electromagnetic solution, and observe.
So, like in this country, we all have, I think you call them furnaces in America, but boilers to heat our homes.
Sure.
They test them out by using smoke, and the way that the smoke goes up the stack and how it disperses beyond that shows whether the thing's working right or not. You're saying that these chemtrails we see in the sky are used as markers to show how manipulation of the jet stream, which determines our weather, is working or not, as the case may be.
Absolutely. It's to observe the circulation system of the planet, very simply. Very simply. And you'll notice that if you have these persistent chemtrails, you know, I'm just going to throw it out there, horizon to horizon. Watch how that trail changes its behavior. Sometimes it'll flatten out. The powder puffs will drop to the bottom. Sometimes they'll spiral. And then where you'll see that first persistent chemtrail, where there is a behavior or a discontinuity in it, there'll be a second trail which will bisect or cut where that discontinuity occurs. So the precision that's being laid out in these chemtrails is unmistakably intentional. There cannot be, with this precision, the participation of commercial aircraft in there. It's just not possible, because those people, that cargo needs to be at a particular place at a particular time, and they can't be lollygagging up in the sky crossing each other's trails. It's just not happening. So there is probably a fleet of commercial aircraft where they carry a cargo of several to many thousands of pounds, and that leaves this background particulate in the sky. And then there's a second fleet which is out there specifically marking where the electromagnetic energies are being artificially introduced into the sky. They have to be there. That is a requirement. Otherwise, you would end up with bizarre weather conditions like we saw in the 70s and 80s globally. Now they've gotten very good. There's a finesse to what they're doing, and that requires the direct measurement of the atmosphere and a direct measurement of what they're doing, and that requires the chemtrails in the sky.
So this is a marker of how well they're doing their job of changing the weather, because
right.
They've got mechanisms now to test it all out. And it's
right.
Not like if I transmit something on a particular frequency, well, I can't see what I've transmitted because it's not within the realms of vision.
Right.
What they've done electromagnetically, you can't see unless you put these trails up there. Then
right.
You can see how the streams are affected.
You have to make the waves visible. And And that's what the trails do, is to make their actions in the sky visible. The problem is there is no class for this in atmospheric sciences, so the meteorologists go out to work, and they're ignorant of it because it has been there their entire lives.
Has anybody ever said to you that that is what's happening? You said that you'd spoken with or had communication with some military people in the U.S. and some other high-ranking people. Has anybody ever actually confirmed this to you?
I had one guy who worked for Honeywell Systems, and he gave me some clues, but Howard, most of it was because of my photographic and time-lapse surveillance of the skies.
Really?
You can see it. You can see it, and anybody can see it, provided they take the time to quit looking at their feet when they're walking to the cars and choose to look up. And it was my choice because, for 5-6 years, from about 1999 to 2005, I would not get back behind the chemtrail, conspiracy. It didn't make any sense. There was no motive. There was no motive that I liked, and most of the websites discussing with it, I thought were just gibberish. They needed to have somebody with some atmospheric science behind them so they could understand the proper use of cloud names. It was that bad. And so I'm like, the only way I'm going to get understand what's going on is with surveillance. And I did it to watch the clouds, not the trails. And so 4 months into this in 2005, I caught, sorties of these flights. And it was like, boom. I just like, that's what they're doing. And then once I knew that the trails were up there to measure the cirrus clouds, to enhance the cirrus clouds, to increase the conductivity of the atmosphere so that these lower electrical influences could have a greater influence on the atmosphere. You get these nanometal particles through the vertical column of the atmosphere, and electricity can flow like a knife. And there's more lightning now. These thunderstorms are more potent. They need less energetic input from their directed energy weapons to get the atmosphere to turn over. It's all about the conductivity and then marking off where they're working. It's very, very simple. It's elegantly simple. And honestly, I got to give a kudos and a bow to the person that came up with it. It was brilliant.
Now, the absolute proof of what you're saying would be if you could say, well, here are some readings, some pictures that I've taken, and there are the chemtrails, and we can then see, with a time lag of whatever it might be, this major climatic event or weather event that devastated such and such a place. If you had the two in correlation, then you've got proof of your theory.
Well, what happened with me is that in June of 2004, I was already archiving high-resolution satellite imagery. And in Montana, which is a low-populated state, there was a weak cold front moving through the state at the time, and there was regularly placed billows. I mean, these clouds were all at about 5 kilometers in width, and it went on for maybe 300 miles. And then over Billings, Montana, a small town, there was a square cloud, and this square cloud was maybe 15 miles by 15 miles. The bizarre thing was exactly west, on the same latitude, about 110 miles, was a hole in this cold front. There was a square that looked like it had been chopped out and then laid down 200 miles ahead of it. And I'm like, I got sick to my stomach because I realized that the entire atmosphere had been digitized. It had been sliced and diced, and they were moving. They were advancing these segments, segment by segment by segment.
Why would they do that in Billings, Montana?
Well, and that was why I had my aha moment, because I was okay with them tweaking hurricanes to enhancing drought, but it was happening everywhere because the Earth's atmosphere is a closed system. It's like an Olympic-sized swimming pool with a little toddler playing at one end. When that toddler plays in one end, it impacts the entirety of the pool. There's nothing to stop the waves. Nothing
so when
all.
You start messing around with one part of it, it is bound to have a knock-on on other parts of it.
Exactly.
And are you saying that is why we're getting this cycle now of storms and droughts and these things that seem to... It's almost like laying down cards. You lay down a card in Russia and they have a heat wave, and then you lay down a card in Pakistan, which is just a little further east from there, and they have terrible floods, and then you lay down another card and there's something else that happens.
And unless you introduce a canceling waveform to constrain you know, what you're doing, say, in the Soviet Union. But that involves us sending out our aircraft to go mark the boundaries of where these waveforms are going to intercept or absorb the energy emanating from, say, Russia. And so once you ping somewhere, you have to put in three or four pings or create a complementary or canceling resonance elsewhere to catch
I've got to try and understand this. So are we talking now about competing groups of people using this technology in ways that will adversely affect the other side? I mean, it's almost like the U.S. and the Soviet Union during the Cold War. If they're using it over there and they're doing one thing with it, it's having a bad effect in America, and America needs to cancel that out, and then it might have a bad effect back again on the Soviet Union. Have I got my head around this?
You're juggling. You're juggling. And so, who gets the last word? You know, and even within the powers that be, it is not a unified front. There are different agendas, and there are those people within that group are at different points of their own spiritual evolvement. There are some that are very evolved and very aware and very compassionate, and that there are others that are stuck in the lower chakras that are completely desire-based and power-hungry. And so there's battles going on with that group as well. So all we can ask for is understanding and the ability to improve ourselves through this game.
Okay. I don't think there is any point at which we could wrap this up really neatly and nicely and tie it up with a little ribbon on the top, because what we're talking about doesn't work that way by the sounds of it. And it's all coming back to me now. We had this problem too when we were on radio. So I'll ask you something now that you might not be able to answer, but give me... Here we are, 2010, we're heading into, well, deeply into the second half of it, almost into the final quarter of 2010. What a quick year this has been.
Indeed.
What do you think, as a weather event of enormous proportions, we've already seen quite a few this year, what do you think the next thing will be?
I think the next big headline will be a hurricane in the Gulf of Mexico. And that will spread... that oil and those toxins across the southeast. And I think we've had the Chinese floods impacting transportation. We've had the Russian fires impacting the global food supply. We've had the floods in Pakistan continue to destabilize that regime. And I think the next step is a hurricane in the Gulf of Mexico.
And if there is a hurricane in the Gulf of Mexico, and if it does whip up all those toxins that, you know, have not yet dispersed, because they will take their time to... Who did that?
Does it matter?
Well, yeah, kind of.
No, it doesn't. It really doesn't. It happened, and we have to deal with the consequences. It really doesn't matter.
Well, that's a good place to hang our hat on this one, I think, Scott. We have to return to this because I'm sure there's going to be more stuff to talk about, but it is fascinating. It's really hard to get your head around because it is so complicated, and I can understand that it's all in your head, but trying to extract it from your head in a way that people who are listening to this can understand,
well,
that's the big task, I think, that we have.
Next time we talk, Howard, I want to talk about where my energies are going now, and that's with Blue Water Alchemy, and it's with Ormus, and it's with how we connect to that energy, that higher aspect of our individual selves, to create a balance and a harmony with our own biological physiology.
Now, that I understand. That's a thing that so many people are talking about now, and that's just, you know, I've got a few people who keep telling me, Howard, you know, you do all this media stuff, you've got to be in balance with the world because none of this stuff matters. Now, you know, that I understand, because a lot of people in a lot of disciplines, and they're not all bead-wearing hippies, a lot of people are saying this stuff now.
And that's the antidote to what the powers that be are doing.
Well, it takes some pretty powerful arguments to wean people like me, who are plugged into new technology, plugged into this civilization, get off on this whole media thing. To get us to wake up and smell the coffee about these things, I think you're going to have to go some, Scott, but I wish you luck with it.
Thank you, Howard. Thanks for the time.
Another controversial guest here on The Unexplained, and somebody we heard from on the radio show 4 or 5 years ago. I had him on 2 or 3 times, you know, and we talked about all of this stuff. And of course, now he's got some more ideas. But the story was that I always enjoyed talking to him, and I always got good audience feedback about him. And then he disappeared completely. And you've just heard some of the reasons why he disappeared. But I really feared for the guy. I thought, well, probably he's gone back to his TV job forecasting the weather in some American city. Or maybe he's been got to. Because some of the stuff he was saying was so controversial, I thought, well, maybe all of this is true and maybe somebody got to him. So at least I've had the answer to some of those questions. Now, the final judge, the final arbiter in all of these things is always you. I don't make decisions about whether a topic and a subject and a guest are good or great or not, whatever. You make those decisions. So go to the website, www.theunexplained.tv. Give me feedback and let me know. Thank you for your great mountain of emails over the last month or so. Many, many people, different parts of the world, a lot from the US, particularly the West Coast, where the show seems to be big. Also, listeners in New Zealand I've heard from over the last month, and Petra in Stuttgart, thank you for your email, but some very, very kind thoughts. So always, feedback welcome. Give me your thoughts on the show, what you would like to hear on it, and I will react to that. And we can always improve here, so I will build in any suggestions that you put to me. Donations, always welcome here for all the reasons I've been through and won't go through again, won't bore you with them, but go to the front page of the website, www.theunexplained.tv, and there is a PayPal link there if you'd like this work to continue. Thank you to Adam Cornwell at Creative Hotspot in Liverpool for getting the show out to you. Thank you to Martin for the great theme tune, and above all, thank you to you for listening to The Unexplained. This has been Edition 42. Coming soon, Edition 43. Take care.